Okay, Mishlei in Modern Psychology on Isra Chag, right after Shavuot here, Tavshim Pei Gimel. Good to have everybody with us. I don't know everybody here. Marsha, Henry, Cherna, and Evan, thank you. And he'll be in person. I think Sarita's away still, although she was there this morning on my class. Thank you to Henry and Barbara Clyde for sponsoring tonight's base medrash classes in honor of Henry's father, Moshe Yosef. Yeah, Moshe Yosef. Marshall Wine. Oh, no, it's Barbara's father. Marshall Wine, that's why it makes sense. Moshe Yosef. Don't know the... the father's name, but his neshama should have an aliyah through our learning and their tzedakah. We are up to Mishlei 24:11. I'm still recovering from Shavuos and general sinus infection. Medication is not helping, but you'll bear with me here, and we'll see how many we get through. The pasuk first tells us 24:11 in Proverbs. Shlomo Melech says, Hatzel l'kuchim l'maves. Hatzel l'kuchim l'maves. So if you save, hatzel l'kuchim l'maves, save things or items for death. So what does that actually mean? So if one were to look at Rashi, l'hatzil es halikuchim l'mus. Hold on, that's not helping me, Rashi. Let me see if there's another one. Umatim laherik al tachsuch. Those that are swaying towards death, don't hold back. So let's see. The art scroll translates it as, if you desist from rescuing those being put to death. Hatzel, oh, lekuchim. Lekuach, lekuchim sometimes means merchandise, like things that are bought. Here it means those who are brought. Lekuchim here is referring to people that are brought to death. So if you hatzel l'kuchim l'maves, I think what it means is to save people. But the word hatzel here, artzel, is not translated like that. Let's see if there are other explanations here.
There's people that have been sentenced to death?
That's what it sounds like, but I'm holding off committing to that. Oh, that's right. If you remember from 3 weeks ago, when we talked about the previous pasuk, we said it's going to be continued. So let's go back for a second. Hatir pra, hit rapita, if you were weak, beyond tera at a difficult time, tsar kochacha, so then you will become weak, right? Meaning that if when you're faced with a challenge and you have to confront it and instead you avoid it, you go around, you don't embrace the challenge, so then you'll be a weaker person. And the next time you'll have a challenge, it'll be even harder to embrace that challenge. So here what it's saying here is that in a similar sense, if you were weak in another's day of affliction, meaning not necessarily your own day, but somebody else's, so then you will become limited. That's how the art scroll is saying it. And if you desist from rescuing those being put to death, meaning that challenge is not just any regular challenge, but they're going to be put to death. Hatzel l'kuchim l'maves. Umatim laherek al im tachsuch. It's still a continuation, according to the art scroll. It's ki tomar hein lo yadanu zeh halo tochin libos hu yavim notar nafshol yeda veheish yivlad b'mfalo. So basically, if you desist from rescuing those being put to death and those on the way to be murdered, if you will say, surely we didn't know this, but the one who resides in the hearts, he understands, and the protector of your soul, he knows, and he recompenses a man according to his deed. Long story short, according to Artrelis, Heshiv L'Admin Kafalo, to the extent that you do not help, that you do not take the initiative for this person in difficult, the existential threat, so then Hashem will reward you or compensate from you as your recompense. He'll get payback from you based on what you did or I guess didn't do in this case.
It's interesting that the focus here is on the negative rather than on the positive.
Right, that is true, and that's why it's so hard to really translate this, especially this Hatzel L'kulchim L'mavas, which is the pasuk that we started with, right? It's going on Hatzel L'kulchim L'mavas Im Tachsoch. Basically to say, as the Mesuras Sava does, Im Tachsoch L'hatzil Asayil L'kulchim, if you hold yourself back from saving those who are being brought to death, and those who are sort of on their way to death, here it says, on their way to being murdered, by umasim lahereg, I guess that means they're being killed one way or another. So then, you'll have the consequences of the next spot that Hashem will pay you back. But let's take this step by step. Hatzel l'kuchim l'maves im tachsoch. Hatzel l'kuchim l'maves umasim lahereg im tachsoch. It's really the sort of the syntax is backwards. That's sort of like a, I guess, a poetic thing. But the Mitzuda, so the Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Im tachsoch lahatzel l'kuchim l'mavetz umatzim l'harek, v'nei yashlam adar v'pasuk sh'ach rav adar v'ku b'imah." Okay, so the Rabbeinu Yonah is basically saying, just like the art scroll is, that the next pasuk goes hand in hand with it. But I'm trying to figure out, what is the difference between hatzel l'kuchim l'mavetz umatzim l'harek? L'kuchim l'mavetz means they're being taken away to die. Matim l'harek means they are sort of on their way to be killed. So the most obvious difference is maves versus hereg. Hereg means to be killed, which is somebody else's fault. Right? If you're being killed, not fault, but somebody else's cause. Right? If somebody else is going to be killed, so then your responsibility is to stop the threat from getting to that person. If the threat is the first part of the pasuk, l'kuchim l'maves, people that are being taken towards death. The death doesn't necessarily mean they're being killed, but they're being taken. So what do I, if I were to sort of extrapolate from here into a modern context, what I would say is that there are different things that will kill people. There are some things that will kill people because others are intending to kill the person, and there are some things that will kill people because others are taking them to places where they will be, or situations where they will be killed. So, for instance, if you're somebody who, let's say somebody is hanging out with the wrong crowd, and that wrong crowd is, gets mixed up with the wrong people or gets mixed up with the wrong substances. So if you get mixed up with the wrong people, so those people could ultimately kill you. I mean, we're talking very drastic terms, but I'd like to take it into a more a practical or relatable example. Let's say, for instance, your persona is being killed or your character is being killed. So you're hanging out with people that are going to kill you, meaning they are explicitly hoping to manipulate you. They're explicitly hoping to, to abuse you. Think of like scammers, for instance, people that call you up, they're trying to, take all your money away. People like Madoff, those people are matim laherig. If you see them and they're investing in some scam, so then they are matim laherig. Now, not literally, Shlomo Elf is talking maybe literally, but I'd like to talk about it more figuratively. You see someone who is matim, they're leaning towards being killed. Yeah, Henry.
But I mean, in terms of a direct association, I mean, you could say that it's a situation where you become aware of actually somebody's plotting to kill someone.
Right.
That you could take action. Or the case you were saying, hanging out with the wrong crowd, let's say it's a crowd that would make you a drug abuser.
Exactly, yeah.
It's likely to die of opioids.
Right. That's exactly where, yeah.
And in the situation that you could help somebody with.
100%. That's where I was going. I was going to go towards the alcohol, drugs, or gambling as the three things that, just situationally you become addicted to the thing that kills you. But it's not that anyone explicitly is trying to kill you, but they are getting you involved in things that will ultimately kill you. So that's what I mean. That's what I think it could mean. L'kuchim l'maves. You are being taken, yes, but they're not killing you. You're just being taken. So, for instance, the people that try to get you to come into the casino, or the people that are lacing your you know, innocuous drugs with something, or the people that are over-prescribing certain medications for somebody who doesn't need that many. Sometimes you do need that money. You know, I was given last week for my sinus infection 5 pills to get rid of my sinus infection. It was not nearly enough. Still not enough, and I got more, but either way, I got to try something else. But the point is that that in the medical field today, I saw this very scary documentary about this doctor that was just prescribing opioids. Just people were paying, and she could get them. She'll make up, you know, make up scripts or whatever. I think nowadays there are some better, I mean, Henry, you'd know better than I would, but there are some better precautions that you have to take in terms of sort of a coalesced medical web. No, don't, or there's like a, now there's like a whole digital community that all the doctors are familiar with.
A lot of documentation and a lot of restriction of opioid prescription by doctors anyway.
Right.
But getting back to the initial, so I was using that case for the second case where somebody is in a situation where he could be ultimately killed. The one with the Kula Limongus,
right.
I was wondering whether that would be more like a governmental thing. Like you've been condemned for some crime that you might be killed for, and there's something in your power that you could do to save that person.
Right. So the one big contrast that I find in these two phrases is la mavis and la hereg. La hereg is, right, la harog means to kill. La mavis means to die. So the contrast there is somebody else doing it to you? So you could be right, let's say, if somebody's taken into prison, then they're going to die in prison. I mean, that's a death. No one's killing them, per se, actively. That would be lahereg. That would be the second part. Lahereg means someone's going to kill you. Lekuchem lamavis means you're being taken, and when you're taken, you will ultimately die. Not that that person's taking you to kill you, but that person is taking you.
You're using that expression as a more passive death.
Right, exactly. But you were still taken to that situation, which ultimately led to your death. So that's where I'm thinking of sort of, you know, addictions of one kind or another. So, but that person stops. So, what are some of the things that we could do, for instance? So if you see someone who is getting involved with too much alcohol, someone who's getting involved with too much, medications, someone who's getting involved with too much gambling. So as a friend, so that's your responsibility. You can't stand idly by. That's what ultimately the pasuk is going to say next. Hashiv la'adam kefalo. Hashem knows what you're capable of. Hashem knows how you can stop a person from spiraling into that situation. And he knows that if you don't do it, you'll be held accountable for it. Now, we can't possibly do that. Hu yavin, as the pasuk says, hu yavin, Hashem knows. Halo tochin libo su yavin, the one who knows the inside of our hearts. How many times do we see, for instance, somebody, you know, doing something that's wrong, and we say, "Oh, I don't want to. I know I should probably say something, but I'd rather not confront him. I'd rather not have to deal with the repercussions of that person's, you know, misbehaviors or that person's wrong decisions. They want to do something, they can do it to themselves. You know, that's a very American perspective. You know, Jonathan Haidt talks about this in his book, The Righteous Mind, I think, where we've gone from a society of morality to a society of just as long as you don't hurt anybody else, right? That's not morality. That's the avoiding liability, right? That's not morality. That's just you don't step on my toes, I won't step on your toes. But what that ultimately allows is people can do whatever they want as long as it doesn't affect anybody else. And in this case, people will absolutely go down the spiral of, you know, pleasure, the spiral of addictions, the spiral of victimhood. A lot of people will use anything, and nobody's going to push back on them. I think a lot of modern day struggle with general culture and society is the inability or the discomfort people have with putting their foot down. You know, how awkward is it to say to somebody, no, you can't do that. That is wrong for you to do. Who are you to say something that's wrong? You don't want to have you think you don't have to get a job? Someone's got to tell you got a job, right? Someone's got to put you in your place. How many people nowadays are willing to put somebody in their place? I was just reading today or listening today to somebody talking about parenting in the modern age and how it's all about affirmation and telling your child, oh, you're good just like you are. And, oh, you can, pursue your dreams. Well, my dream is to be, whatever. I don't want to fill it in case anybody is going to be offended. But if I would know you personally and know that situation, so I would tell you. But right now I'm not dealing with that situation. So the point is, how many parents are just always, oh, that's wonderful. I know parents who never say no to their child. It's like a newfangled parenting strategy. Never say no. Always say it in a positive way. As opposed to saying, no, you can't have more dessert, you say, you can have more tomorrow. Okay? Well, then you're basically living your life always affirming them in some way or another. And the child is never able to just say, to just hear the words no, to hear the words. So I'm very opposed to that, in an absolute sense. I think that we should, we should engage with positive psychology with our children, but not to the exclusion of when they have to hear no, so they have to say no. And I think that's a big idea. And I think that's what's, sort of underscores these psukim, that we're all turning a blind eye to the people who are lefuchim mamavis, umatim lahereg, right? The people that are being taken to their death. Again, not existentially, but in terms of their character, in terms of who they are, or they're going to be killed. You associate with these people, they're going to kill your character, they're going to kill who you are. And nobody's willing to put their foot down because, who am I to say, who am I to tell them what not to do? Well, if you're a parent, for sure, if you're a good friend, for sure, you should tell them. Now, you have to say it in the right way, but Hashem will seek retribution from those who could have done something and didn't do anything. Now, this is obviously talking about existential threats. That's for sure true, but that's a pasuk in the Torah. Right, that you have to save. Al tamar al damar yecha. Don't stand idly by upon your friend's blood. Here we're talking about somebody. Well, I mean, maybe we could be talking about that also, but perhaps this is even more expansive, talking about someone who is engaging in risky behavior, and you didn't stop them from going down that spiral. So then Hashem. Yeah, Evan.
So I work with like 3 or 4 people, and they're kind of like friends, and they're smokers. I mean, I don't feel comfortable telling them you shouldn't smoke. I don't even know that it would be effective. Like, is that something that this is what it's referring to?
So it could be. It depends on your relationship. My impression is that they're coworkers, and it's not like you guys are buddy-buddy, but rather you just sort of like a working relationship. The Gemara tells us in Erechin that you should not rebuke anyone who's not able to listen to it. It'll just make matters worse. So in that situation, I'd imagine it's not the best time, place, or a relationship to use this idea. But if it was a family member who was engaging that kind of behavior, and you had a generally healthy relationship with them, so then that would be a situation where you would sit them down, talk to them in a kind way, and say, look, I really care about you, and I think this is really important for you to know that this could be harmful to you. Is there a way that I can help you get past that, whatever it is? So there are different ways, different situations you'd approach it differently, but still to do nothing, Hashem sees that you're actively choosing nothing, right? Hashem sees that your decisions are, I just want to avoid the conflict. So that's the problem. Ki tamar hein lo yadanu zeh, right? If you, as the pasuk says in Yud Beis here, if you will say, surely we did not know this, meaning you're pretending like you don't know. You're turning your eyes, so-and-so is in struggling with alcohol? I didn't know. I mean, you saw him going into the Kiddush Club a little early. You saw him sneaking away and drinking something when nobody else was watching. And now you're going to claim innocence. You're going to claim that you never knew about it. So that's where we get back into, depends on the relationship, depends on who you're dealing with. Things that happened in the shul, and I haven't seen them myself, but once somebody told me about them, so then we have to do something about them. But the point is, we can't lie, because halo tochen libos, behold the one who can see within one's heart, within all hearts, hu yavin, he knows what you know. He knows that you saw it. He knows you're aware of it. V'notzer nafshecha hu yeda, And the one who created your soul is the one who knows, will know. And the protector of your soul, he knows. And he will sort of give you your due. Recompenses a man according to his deeds, or in this case, the lack of his deeds, I think. Let me read this here. Beheshit, and so the stuff it says, Hu yashiv gemul ha'adam kemifalo. V'im yadata v'hitrapisa, yi yasar kocha chamida chamida. That your strength will also weaken. That goes back to a few weeks ago when we read the previous pasuk. I do think there's an interesting nuance here. We're trying to say that Hashem is the one who knows. But we say it in two different ways. We say on the one hand, he is tochein libos. He is the one who knows the inside of your heart, resides in your heart. And secondly, he's a noter nafshecha hu yeda, the one who created your soul. So what's the difference between Hashem presented as the one in your heart versus Hashem presented as the one who created your soul? Now, I'm sure there are many sort of homiletical directions you can go with this. The way that I'm going to go with it is to say that there are different ways as to why we might justify not helping somebody. On the one hand, there's the emotional. I feel bad. It's uncomfortable for me. I don't want to do it because, you know, it'll feel awkward. You know, emotionally, it's too demanding of me. I'm going to get too wrapped up. I'm going to get too anxious. It's too stressful. So that's an emotional. And to answer that, Hashem says, I know your emotions. I'm tochein libos. I know what you're going through. I know how emotional it is for you. And you still have to do it. Or Hashem will see that really it is emotionally too much, and he'll see that too. The point here is that we have to be honest about what we really see and what we really feel, as opposed to sort of turning a blind eye and pretending what we are. So that's emotional. You feel, you know, oh, it's going to be too, you know, stressful for me. On the other hand, there's noter nafshecha. Noter nafshecha is a little harder to pin down, but I would say maybe on a religious sense, your soul, right? Your nefesh. Your nefesh, maybe you would say that in a religious sense, you're going to justify, you know, okay, as the Gemara in Yoma says, you know, we'll sacrifice this Shabbos so that maybe later on we'll keep some more Shabboses, you know? That's, okay, we'll let him violate or her violate this thing so that maybe down the road, you know, down the road something will come to be. I was listening to a fascinating podcast recently called the 1840 podcast. Maybe I've talked about it before. Someone who I like to think of as a colleague, David Bashevsky. Now maybe he's gotten too big for me, but David Bashevsky has a wonderful podcast where he tackles some very heavy issues. Anyone who's looking for like a deep dive into some of the main, you know, the real heavy situations in the modern world for the Jewish people, Orthodox Jews. You know, he talks about addiction. He talks about mismatched religious couples. He talks about Zionism. He talks about a bunch of different things. So the one that I was just listening to recently was really about intermarriage, which was interesting because he had three different people on. He had someone who was about to intermarry, someone whose child did intermarry, and then someone who did intermarry, but then the spouse converted into Judaism. It's a 2-hour-long podcast. These three, you know, he gives 30 to 40 minutes for each one. Fascinating, sad, emotional. It's like a whole, it's a roller coaster, this podcast. Some people think that David speaks too much on this thing. I like David when he speaks, so for me, it's not so bad. But my point here is that the first of the three, he talks about how he was going along with this relationship, and he was sort of, you know, getting up in the in the more intense stages. You know, it was sort of like now or never type of thing. Am I going to go through with it or not? And the guy who was being interviewed said, you know, push came to shove, I couldn't do it to my parents type of thing. I couldn't do good to the Jewish people. You know, he said his main motivator was all the difficulties of Jewish people throughout history, and I'm going to be the one that sort of ruins it, you know? So that's what, for him, that's what did it. But he talked about this guy, that there were different aspects of the stage for him, and there are different aspects that for other people would do different things. And I was thinking to myself, I can imagine, depending on the parents' relationship, that's the kind of thing you've got to stop it in its tracks early on. Not to say that that's a foolproof, you know, plan. You know, the next mother who's the parent of a child who actually did intermarry tried to do that and it didn't work. So this is very tricky. This is a very tricky thing, but some parents will take the strategy of noter nafshecha, that their soul, you know, they'll look at, you know, the religious eventuality of the child or of the child's child and say, okay, we're gonna sort of cut our losses here, let them intermarry. If it's a daughter, so hopefully their child will come back to Yiddishkeit. And that's what the second mother was doing. The second mother talked about how her daughter intermarried, and they tried to stop it, and at a certain point, she just said, okay, fine. If you guys want to get married, we're not going to be happy. And if you want us to be there, so then two things have to happen. Number one, the wedding has to be kosher. Three things have to happen. Number one, the wedding has to be kosher food. Number two, it has to be absolutely nothing religious, nothing Jewish about the ceremony. We don't want anyone to think that this is, you know, rubber stamped by anything Jewish. And then number three is that if there's ever a boy born, he has to have a bris. Those are the three conditions they gave to this. It's an unbelievable podcast, and it really gets your mind spinning. It's very sad, but whatever. You have to deal with real things in the world. And she talks about that same concept, which is sometimes you sacrifice the here and now for the later religious, you know, the later religious results. And what this mother is hoping is that through her support, although it's at a distance, through her support, that grandson will one day come back to Judaism. He is Jewish, after all, right? But if you sort of cut it off and just, you know, cut them off like you amputate them from the family, so then you're never going to have that chance. So it depends. No ternafshach, I think, here means sometimes we make calculations to ourselves in a religious sense, on the religious realm, and we say, "Oh, I don't want to ruffle their feathers. Maybe they're not going to like, me, or maybe they're going to be, uncomfortable with Judaism if I were to tell them off or to have this conversation with them." So Hashem is also the no ternafshach. He knows whether that's a legitimate religious justification or not. You should know, by the way, that the last example was of a woman who went through the Beis Yaakov system, loved her whole time of it. It just happened to meet a nice non-Jew. And then they got married, unbelievably. And then after a couple years, she realized that when she got, I think the way she said it was, the first time she had a pregnancy test, and she realized that her child is going to have a non-Jewish father, she couldn't take it anymore. Because she enjoyed Judaism. She fell into this crazy relationship. And she says one of the most important things that ever happened to her was that her father called her every Friday afternoon and wished her a good Shabbos. And gave her a bracha. You know the bracha say Friday night. Gave her a bracha, wished her a good Shabbos. She never said good Shabbos back. But she always had that connection with her father. And that's sort of what kept her. And now, they've been converted, or he's been converted for 20 years, and the child and the children are all going through the yeshiva system, and it's a nice, beautiful ending. But some don't end like that. Some obviously don't end like that. But that's what I think maybe is going on here. There's tochen libos, there's the emotional discomfort of confronting somebody. So Hashem is the tochen libos. He knows what's really uncomfortable and what you're using as an excuse on the emotional level. And then secondly, he's the noter nafshecha. He knows what your soul is. He knows the religious components of what goes into it also. The nafshecha, again, as I said before, is not as clear-cut as I'm making it out to be. But to say that Hashem knows what is and what isn't a true and legitimate justified excuse, and what is just an excuse that's not justified. And in both of those aspects, that a person might justify to themselves, unjustifiably reason to themselves, either on an emotional discomfort level or religiously uncomfortable level, whether that's really true. So maybe that's how you can understand it. I'm sure there are other explanations too. Yud Gimel. Echol v'ni dvash ki tov. So this sounds like we are shifting gears here. Eat honey, my child. V'nofes masok al chikecha, and take the honeycombs. What is this? Fruit is good, and drippings of the honeycomb are sweet on your palate. Right? If I were a betting man, when you see any analogy to honey, just assume it's talking about Torah mitzvos. Right? So here we're shifting gears. As Henry pointed out before, we're no longer talking in the negative. If you don't do this, you don't do that. But now we're talking in the positive. Eat the honey. So Rashi tells us, "Echol dvash klama derech b'nei adam lachol dvash ki tov hu af." I don't know what that means, af. But people like to eat honey because it's very sweet. Oh, I think it means that that's a continuation. Hold on. Yeah, so yeah, it's really a read-through according to Rashi and Mitzvot Seven, that Echol v'nei dvash ki tov v'nofes masok yichecha al chikecha, just like, and that's what Rashi is saying, just like honey is good and honeycomb is sweet, kein ze'ech achma l'nafshecha, so too is the knowledge of wisdom for your soul, im asasa v'yesh achris, if you found it and you see its results, I think that's what it means, for it has a lasting outcome, v'sikvaso lo tikares, and its hope will not be cut off. If you have chachma, if you have wisdom, so then ultimately it'll work out. And the Mitzvot Seva says, "Kein yakmochein da chachma l'takenes nafshecha." Know the wisdom which will help your soul. Im asasa osa v'yesh lecha lev me'asig. If you found wisdom and your heart is willing to comprehend it, v'yesh achras, says Mitzvot Seva, Mitzvot Lomar, v'tova him in hadvash. It's even better than the honey. Ki v'zeh yesh achras tov. Ah, interesting. So it's not in the pasuk like that, but you could understand the pasuk to be saying the yesh acharis. Not only is it sweet right now, but there's also a sweetness afterwards. Yesh acharit, right? Honey will taste good, and then it'll be gone. It won't taste good anymore. Whereas wisdom, it'll taste good now, and you'll be able to enjoy it later too. Aval hadvash, but sometimes honey lefamim yazik b'acharon. Sometimes if you have too much honey, it's actually poisonous. Isn't honey poisonous, especially for little kids? There's something in honey that, like, if your body doesn't break it down properly, it could be dangerous. Obviously, now we have all this healthy or whatever, but v'sikvascha, and the hope that you hope you have for it, hagmosh atamakava ba'abura hine lo tikares. The hope that you have will not be disappointed. Right? I paid all this tuition for my education. Don't worry. It'll pay off. Assuming you did it seriously. And that's going back to what I said before. Im yesh lecha lev masig, if you had an intrigued heart. V'kev adav in the Shonos fine. He says this is W saying a couple of times in different ways. But the point is that honey is just as sweet if you engage with it right away. And is just as sweet, wisdom is just as sweet as honey, and wisdom is even better because you can enjoy it now and later. So it reminds me of a study that, what's his name? Dan Gilbert, in his book, Stumbling on Happiness, that's what it's called. Dan Gilbert, I might be confusing him with a basketball owner. Either way, The book is called Stumbling on Happiness, and in there he brings a fascinating study where he gives people the choice. You can either have a candy bar, or you can take a 10-question quiz. Sounds like a pretty obvious choice. I'll take the candy bar, thank you very much. Then they tried it again, and they gave people 10 questions. And then after the 10 questions, they were intriguing questions people didn't know the answers to. Then they offered them, I'll give you a candy bar or the answers to the 10 questions. And all of a sudden, a lot of the people wanted the answers instead of the candy bar. Because what we don't realize is, while wisdom is intimidating from the outset, while wisdom is, oh my gosh, look at this text, look at this book, 31 chapters of esoteric and poetic, you know, ideas from a king 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, I'd rather just enjoy some honey right now. Once you engage, once you actually understand it, once you're intrigued and you're thirsting for it, what you realize is that the words of that 2,000-year-old king and the ideas that are inside that book are much more satisfying than just the chocolate bar. And when you have a thirst for the answers, it will not just sustain you in the moment like a good, you know, honeycomb, but it'll sustain you later as you can recall and use the wisdom that you gain from that learning. So that's what Shlomo is saying here. It's not just as good as honey. It's even better than honey. Excuse me, and I think we said this earlier in Mishlei also. What do we say also on Shabbos morning? We talk about this. What do you say Shabbos morning? Misukim midvash menoches sufim. The Torah is sweeter than honey. Now, this is not saying that it's sweeter. This is saying that it's just as good and even better afterwards. So I think a lot of times we underestimate wisdom. We live in a world which is sort of, you know, obsessed and trained to look for the immediate pleasures in life. And sometimes we don't realize that those pleasures can be replaced with something much more substantial, much more profound. I can tell you on my own, when it comes to, engaging with Torah, oftentimes all you need to do is start. The hardest part is to start. It's like a good exercise routine. You just get yourself going, and once you're going, you're going. I believe the Heath brothers talk about in their book called Switch, the 5-minute rule, right? Yeah, I think I definitely talked about this before. You have a dirty bedroom, and so I really got to clean. I got to clean my office today. This is crazy. But you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's so much work. I'd rather just, you know, do something else which is more, you know, more rewarding, more pleasurable. The key is not to force yourself to clean your whole room. The key is just clean the desk. Just clean the desk. Or just spend 5 minutes. Okay, it's 9:15 now. Until 9:20 I'm going to clean, and then I'm going to stop. 9:15 is 9:20. And then you realize at 9:20, it's not so bad. It's actually really nice. Look at this. I can see my desk again. You know, I want to keep going. This is really good. What you don't realize sometimes about the wise and profound parts of life is that they can be just as, if not more, sustaining and more rewarding in the long run. It's just that at the outset, you don't see it that way. You don't really know. You don't feel it as you do with honey until you actually engage with it. So that's what Shlomo Melech is saying here. Echol b'ni drash ki tov revas masoch afikecha, just like honey is sweet, came to achasma. You should know. So is wisdom. So is wisdom. Imasasav yeshachris. If you're looking for it, if you're looking for it, there's another important reminder that imasasav, if you find it. And if you're not looking for it, you're not going to find it. Yeah, that's what the Gemara tells us. If somebody says, Ha'omer yagati v'lo masasi al-tamin, if a person says, I tried to find Torah, I tried to achieve a certain expertise in Torah, but it just didn't work. I tried to learn Gemara, it just didn't work. So then, al-tamin, don't believe them. What you're not believing is you didn't really try. You didn't try the right way. You didn't really put in the effort. You tried like you went to a shir. You tried like, yeah, you opened up an art school. But you didn't really want it. You didn't really put the effort in. Because if you would, you would have found it. Right now we are on 24:14. 24:14, kind of. Alternatively, if you say, I did not put any effort in, but I was able to accomplish a certain expertise, also don't believe them. They looked it up on Google. That's not real expertise. True expertise is only when yagati umatasi. I put the effort in and I found it. That's what it means here. Imatasa, if you find it, so then it's rewarding. Then it's rewarding because you really put the effort in. Okay, Pasuk 15:24-15. We'll finish with this. Al tarov rashlin veitzadik, al tishadei rivso. Do not te'arov. Te'arov means like, I think it's an ambush or something. What does it say here? Interesting. Al te'arov rush l'nevei tzaddik. That you should not lurk. The evil person should not lurk around the home of a righteous person. Al tishaded rivto. You should not plunder his residence. Oh, this is another combination. Next pasuk. Oh, famous pasuk. Okay, we're gonna have to really hone in on next pasuk. This is really an introduction to a famous pasuk. Perhaps the most famous. There are a lot of famous pasukim, and I know I've said that previously in other pasukim in Mishlei. But the next one is certainly famous. What it's saying here is, do not try to ambush or to plunder the home of the righteous person, whether it means literally, or it means in one way or another. You're trying to best a righteous person. Because a righteous person, you know what a righteous person does? Kisheva yipol tzadik akam. Seven times he falls up, falls down, and then he gets back up. Sheva yipol tzadik akam. He falls down and he gets back up. We're going to have to talk about that a lot next week. Don't mess with a righteous person, because even if you think you got him once, he'll get back up and he'll get back to you. And he'll still succeed. You might think you can best him or her at whatever game you're playing, but ultimately it's not going to hurt them, because someone who's righteous recognizes that maybe right now I failed, right? Maybe right now I haven't succeeded. I could do better though. And they'll get back up and try again. That's what righteousness is. Easier said than done. But in Mirza Hashem, we will connect this pasuk 15 and 16 next week. Talk about perhaps one of my favorite drashas from Rav Yitzchak Huttner on this pasuk. What does it mean, Kisheva Yipol Tzadik to come? What does it mean for a righteous person to fall down seven times and get up? Okay, Mirza Hashem, we'll continue next week. Thank you again to Henry and Barbara Clyde for sponsoring tonight's Medrash classes, including this one, Le'ilo Nishmas, Moshe Yosef, Barbara's father. Mirza Hashem, his neshama shavan aliyah.